FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 4/4/17. Well, just as March Madness winds down yesterday with North Carolina's victory, well, this is Uncle Sam's month to, I guess, shine in terms of tax receipts. Anyway, this is the month, and figured we would get somebody in here who really knew what was going on. Talking about the Chief Tax Officer of Jackson Hewitt, Mark Stieber, and nobody knows more about what's really going on behind the scenes than you do, Mark. So we welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Kerry. It's good to be here.
Hey, so a lot of things go on in April. There's the last minute tax dash, but this year is a little bit different than most years, isn't it?
It is. It started off with the passage of the PATH Act last December 2015, where the IRS extended a dozen or so of the expiring tax provisions, ranging from teachers' out-of-pocket expenses to tuition and fees to sales tax deductibility. But within the PATH Act was a couple of other pieces of legislation, well-intended, that were trying to help the IRS do a better job of refund, you know, verification. So they required all employers to send in their W-2 earlier to the IRS, January 31st, the same date you and I get them as employees, rather than later in the spring and in the summer, allowing better data matching. But the one big thing that affected this year's tax returns was the delay in refunds for taxpayers who qualified and got the earned income credit or the additional child tax credit. If you were one of the 30 or so million taxpayers who got either one of those and you filed in early January or early February, your refund was pushed out. Well, that had the impact of having a lot less tax filers file early because they weren't getting their refund. So IRS started out slow and has continued to progress and make up ground, but they were still pretty far off their, you know, annual norms even up a couple of weeks ago. So there's still 3 or 4 million tax filers who have historically filed by now that have not for one reason or another. And there's a lot of other speculation on was that Affordable Care Act people or I-10 holders or what have you. But all your listeners need to know is that there's a lot fewer people that have filed so far, and what's normally a mad dash to April 15th, this year April 18th, and that will only be compounded by these other folks who've yet to file, who in all likelihood will be filing in the next 2 weeks or so. So, big volume shift. Probably will return to normal next year, but right now, a lot of pent-up demand in the tax ecosystem, a lot more probably coming in the next 2 weeks. People have all staffed up for it, or we certainly have here at Jackson Hewitt and have extra hours, extra people, but still a lot of folks have not yet filed, which they had in prior years. So we're very optimistic over the next couple of weeks, but a lot of people coming. So it is tax season for sure, if anyone had any question before this weekend.
And so the government's trying to do something now about identity theft, I take it. Some of those measures that you discussed are to help curtail tax refund fraud?
Absolutely. And the IRS has been very focused on a variety of security fronts for a couple of years now, with a very big focus on data matching using their tools that they've had in place or databases. So there's a lot more going on in terms of taxpayer identity verification, information verification on an individual's tax return. This EITC and earned income tax credit verification is part of that element, just making sure that, you know, if you have earned income credit on your tax return and you've claimed dependents associated with that and you've claimed who you are, they have a few extra days or weeks to make sure that data is accurate and, you know, less faulty payments paid out. Because the earned income credit program is a great program, certainly very successful program in terms of the benefits that it provides, but it is a pretty easy thing to get, you know, and so the IRS has ramped up their, you know, data verification, data matching, and to that end, it's a little bit more pain to the taxpaying public in that it takes 2 or 3 extra weeks, you know, in delaying getting their refunds.
Right. And we've seen between those two things, between identity theft and the earned income tax credit, seen a lot of fraud take place, billions of dollars worth effectively. So it's about time, isn't it?
It's certainly a good program, and I think it's going well, but the overall tax system, quite frankly, is been under assault for some time now, and the IRS has stepped up that. States also are getting very active with additional information, and so some taxpayers may feel a little bit of friction having to provide a bit more information than they have in the past, but that's all in the pursuit of, better and safer and more accurate, tax return administration and proper refund distribution. The IRS and states in particular are wanting to make sure that refunds, because 3 out of 4 taxpayers get a refund, and it's a pretty big item historically, $2,500 or so on average on the federal side. It's a pretty big number, and that attracts a certain, element. So the IRS has had to ramp up their game, and so are the states, to make sure that you get yours and someone else doesn't. So yeah. It's a very important issue, the single biggest financial transaction for most people each and every year. And you as a taxpayer and I and others should give it the attention it's due. And the IRS and the states should do their part as well. And in tandem, that should make it all a better and safer place and a safer transaction.
Yeah, and hopefully they're checking the geolocation. So if you've been getting a refund in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for the past 30 years, and all of a sudden your address changes to someplace in Eastern Europe, that's going to send out a red flag now.
Yeah, there's a lot of technology tools in place, a lot more being proposed. It'll be important that the right balance is taken, but you're absolutely right. There's a lot of data that goes in with your tax return. As you well know or may know, over 80 or higher than 80% of folks now electronically file their taxes in one form or another, either using a professional or some do-it-yourself platform. A lot of information goes with that tax return. You would certainly like to think, and the IRS is doing a good job of taking some of that data and making sure you are who you say you are, the information is correct and accurate, and your refund is proper and saving problems on the back end. The historical days of filing a tax return and then auditing it, months or even years later, that's kind of, gone the way of the old rotary phone. Now the IRS is doing a much more engaged, front-end review and determination, and rightly so. It makes everybody safer. But even then, the thieves are pretty creative, so I would tell your listening audience, you can never be too vigilant with your tax return, information. Some of those time-tested and proven best practices still work, right? Don't leave your, tax return on the copy machine. Don't do your tax return and save the file on the company hard drive. Don't leave your tax data laying around. And for goodness sake, don't throw away your old tax returns into the garbage. All of that's very lucrative, personal information that bad guys love. So pay attention to a few of the, best practices. Keep your personal information safe. The IRS and states are doing their part. And in tandem, all that just leads you to a safer tax return and safer personally protected information.
So along those lines, there's a lot of mistakes that people make last minute filing because you're under the gun, you're stressed out, and you're just in a rush because you want to get the money. What are the most common mistakes that we're talking about here, Mark?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably the most common question. What did I do wrong or what should I watch out for to do wrong, Kerry? And so, I guess what we typically see is, in addition to the tax code being 70,000 pages and, plenty of room for mistake in there to start with, the later you get and the closer you get to the deadline, just the natural tendencies are to shortcut or maybe, take a shorter path and leave something off your tax returns. But a lot of the mistakes of old, mathematical errors or tax computational errors, those don't happen as much. More common today, especially as you outline when people get in a hurry, best technology on earth, the best computer on earth won't catch a transposed number as you or even a tax professional are keying in your wages or your withholding, or items like that. Certainly, it may catch a Social Security number because it won't match and the IRS will send you back a notice. But if you leave off a zero on your tax withholding and just put in less, or if you even put in more, that's not going to really get caught by any of the current systems because, that won't be matched right away. So key punch errors still happen. Fat finger keystroke issues still happen. But the biggest mistake that I see here in the final couple of weeks, to your point, is that people get in a hurry. They just want to get it done. They just want to cross off the I got my taxes, filed and I'm over with. And that leads to people, again, hurrying and perhaps overlooking a benefit that might otherwise they would be entitled to. So whether it's a deduction or a credit or a business expense related to their self-employment activity or full-time self-employment activity, or they leave off a deduction for home office or a credit for some higher education that a dependent's, you know, taking, you know, the leaving off of a tax benefit under the hurried, I'm getting it done, you know, mindset is probably the biggest mistake, because that's the kind of mistake that does not get caught. If you leave off income, if you leave off wages, if you leave off interest or dividend or stock sales or self-employment income, the IRS will catch that. You know, that's reported to them. So you'll get a notice you left off this wage statement. Even if you were in a hurry, it doesn't matter. But if you leave off a charitable donation, if you leave off some business expense, if you leave off, you know, a dependent, for example, if you're taking care of a new dependent parent that you're caring for, there will not be a magic check in the mail. You won't get a notice that, hey, we found this deduction you left off. Here's an extra $1,000. So the biggest mistake in summary, Kerry, is if you leave something off of your tax return that's yours, that you're entitled to, that's a benefit, there's not really a good safeguard, you know, mechanism by which that will get detected, other than if a company like Jackson Hewitt does a review of your returns when you bring them in later. But again, that's still on you. So if you hurry and you leave something off, especially something good, it's not likely to make its way back on there. So take a little extra time. There's plenty of time here to go. We and others have plenty of resources. We're open early. We're open late. Give your tax return a little bit more attention. Find that prior year return. Get your shoebox or your envelope ready. Sort through it. Reflect on your year for some life changes to those that you know about and married or had a child or adopted a child is obvious. But if you're taking care of a dependent parent now, if you've started your own side business or a business to augment your regular job, if you've formed some new enterprise, you know, and you've got activity from that, be sure you bring that up to your tax pro and let them figure out what that might mean for you. It could be the difference between a regular refund or a super big refund, and it's just smart business.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the people who among the group that make the largest number of omissions and mistakes got to be the independent contractors and the gig economy, because a lot of you out there who started these gigs probably new to being self-employed, right?
That is the number one thing we see, Kerry. You're exactly right. Especially for folks who've been an employee like myself for many years, they start doing business on the side, either full-time or part-time. They're not used to tracking their hours. They're not used to tracking their business expenses. They're not used to keeping up with business mileage or gifts to associates who, you know, shed some leads to them that is fully deductible. But I don't get to deduct gifts that I give to people right now as an employee. So it's a fundamental change in your tax profile when you become an independent contractor or a gig economy worker or self-employed. A lot of benefits in there, but some of that work starts with you to have to keep up with some of it. And we'll talk a little bit about what's the proper level of record keeping. But if you don't know where to look and you've not done it before, that's another good time to engage a tax pro to just give you some tips. You know, and the internet's a great place to get some of those. And our website at jacksonhewitt.com is a great place to get some of those. But you need to start paying attention to your business and making sure you get all the deductions and credits that you deserve. It can be the difference between making money or really making money, because you've eliminated some of your tax burden through better record keeping, better organization, just better administration. And frankly, that's what you would want to have with somebody who's giving you service, or if you're doing it for yourself. So keep up with all those things. Let your tax pro help. But if you don't take them, someone's not going to come and find them for you. That's the point I would leave you and your listeners with.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's kind of up to you. If you miss it, you're kind of screwed. There's nobody else
you
that's going to do it.
Yep.
So as far as setting up a system so that you have all of this stuff, a shoebox really in this day and age is totally inadequate to the figurative shoebox. You got to come up with a better system than that. Any suggestions for doing that, Mark?
You're absolutely right, but I don't laugh off the shoebox, Kerry. It's better than nothing at all when people come in and say, you know, I had all this. So the shoebox is probably the last line of defense, but I like technology. I like the use of my smartphone. You don't have to go too far, and Jackson Hewitt certainly has a simple account that you can set up, whether you're a client or not client, called MyJH, and you can network that to your smartphone so that if you're at a business lunch, you take a picture of your receipt, you press the beam button, you send it over there, and it's there. If you've got a business trip, two pictures of your odometer, you're good to go. So you're really not limited in any real description of what you can do. Find out what works for you. I like technology. I like using my smartphone. I like taking quick pictures of whatever the event or the issue or the element or the deduction or the activity is, and then saving that to a central storage space, whether that be when you sync your computer to your smartphone or an external account that's there with your tax pro when you go see them next year. That's a pretty simple thing to do, and you can track all sorts of items that way. There's no real limit to what you can do with it, but use your smartphone, use your smart technology. But much like the shoebox, I find that the spiral notebook in the glove box is also a good way to track your business miles and business activities, your business lunches. That works too. You don't have to have an enormous record-keeping system, but you do need something. You need something to be able to keep, one, track of it, and two, to substantiate it should Uncle Sam come looking, or a state or other regulator. So you don't have to do a lot, but you do have to do something. Otherwise, your tax pro doesn't have as much to work with other than your good memories. And if they're like me, my memories are not so good. So start somewhere, start easy, and then build out for what works for you and how complex your system is.
Yeah, so you kind of use a regular shoebox for the physical stuff, and then you use what I guess you would call a virtual shoebox there, huh?
Absolutely. It's what people are comfortable with, but some people are more astute with technology. My kids run circles around me with some of the things they do, but I've gotten to be pretty good with the camera and the email. That's not really that hard to do. And then I just store it all in one place on my computer. I email my stuff all day long to me, and then I've got one big file, Mark 2017, that's where I store all my graphics. I also have a Word document where I keep track of other activities during the year. And I'm an employee, right? So equally, works for me or for an independent contractor.
Yeah, right. And then you kind of assemble all that stuff and bring it over. And also it makes the whole process a lot faster and easier. Right. So,
yeah. And it just pays dividends. Right. So if you spend an hour a month or so, 10 hours at the end of the year, and you get a bigger refund, say $500, you're paying yourself $50 an hour for your work. And that's pretty good work. Anytime you want to give me $50 an hour, I will do it. So, that's kind of a simple return on your investment of time. And an hour for your single largest financial transaction, each year, an hour a month, not really that big an investment for someone, especially if you have self-employed activity where you're spending a heck of a lot more time than that doing your work. So you should keep up with your stuff. It will pay off over the time. If not every year, then the year when you have big transactions, because you'll certainly need to keep track of those activities.
It will make so much sense. An ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. And to facilitate all of your transactions, your final filing for the year, and then it pays you back. So what could be better than that?
I mean, seriously, you're paying yourself for work. If you're already self-employed or you're already an employee, and it works the same for both, whether you're keeping track of charitable activity that you do during the year and that mileage that you spent driving to the charitable location for your church or your synagogue or your mosque, or whether you're taking some activities that might qualify for medical or any number of events, really, a little bit better record will pay you tax dividends, and that's a pretty simple price to pay.
Well, makes total sense. Hey, Mark, if we want to find out more about you, more about Jackson Hewitt, what do we do?
Well, we have a very simple website. One word, www.jacksonhewitt.com. And on there, Kerry, you'll find tools, frequently asked questions that our clients ask, and we keep them all and make them available to the public. But checklists on overlooked deductions. Do I qualify for this education credit or earned income credit? Do I get this dependent care credit? So there's a lot of information that people, they may hear your show or podcast and say, I wonder if that applies to me. Well, you can go to our website and you can get more information on a variety of topics. If you just want to cut to the bottom line and say, I just want to go to these guys, they're genius from listening to this Mark Stieber guy. You click the little box in the top right, put your zip code in, up pops the map with the offices of our 6,000 or the closest to you. You roll over that with your little pointer. It'll give you information, hours, contact information, number. You can even make an appointment and just get it all handled, outsourced pretty quickly. So our website's really great. A lot of options to self-serve or to get help or to find help. pretty quick, pretty usable, you know, and so I highly recommend anybody who's got an interest in getting their taxes done in the next 2 weeks, start there or show up at your local office.
All right. Hey, and if you got any questions, comments about this interview or any others we do, send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed is @KerryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for coming on and happy filing.
Great, Kerry. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.